My own kind of reading this evening would be also sort of a Shamrock system. I read a bit from the book first. Hopefully there won't be too many overlap with poems that I read the last time I was here. And then I'll read some new work, and at the end there's something just so I'll begin with a meditation. I'm actually going to take for today. That's for a particular mid-morning meditation. Unable to concentrate on work, suffering an internal knot over characters and plot, I use the desk and the mini mouse of sawdust vigorously melting under it. Woodworm. There is woodworm everywhere. The house is being slowly eaten alive. Sometimes it moans. Just a quiet creak, not intending to disturb, accepting, maybe even glad to be so relished. Unable to concentrate on work, I hang my hair out the open window, spill it all out on the terrace to get tangled in a dying witch hazel in a cracked pot. An ant zigzags across the tide, an ant without a colony, unemployed. An old church pew pulled away from its joints. It too is cracking along the grain for lack of pious buttocks and bony knees, lack of feet and elbows to scuff it ardently, whispering the worn mantras of the world. The ant is lost. The pew misplaced. There is no God. Pots crack, beams threaten to give and kill me in my sleep. Hazelnuts in groves are going to waste. The grapes are not yet ripe. This is the sum of life to date. It is a blessed day. And the second one I wrote for my son during the first week of his life, which is quite an accomplishment. I don't know if you have children, you start to get into the shower before midday, so I know where I got the time to write a poem in the first week, but it's dedicated, his name is Michael, but it's not dedicated to Michael, it's actually for Mr. Fu, because I planned on calling him John, but when I saw him the night he was born, I thought, it doesn't look like a John, I can't possibly call him John, so I have to call him something else. So he didn't have a name for about a month because he couldn't think of a name, so during that time we just called him Mr. Fu. So that's why it's for Mr. Fu, and there's a lot of reference to stone, because my father and his father before him were stonemasons. So, furniture food. The expressions of old men have dug themselves in the quarry of your wrinkled face, folding into and out of itself like water, washing centuries of sleep off sculpted stone these hours of your first week. They have carved the pleasures and pains of all the lives that went into your making, until the moment you became a thought, drafted in darkness, and they applied their craft on you. The multiplicity of your face is proof that you will learn what you already know, everything they taught you as time grows from days to weeks to needs of different kinds, and you sweat like them to find expressions worthy of engraving on future faces, to find knowledge that is no different from quality workmanship or from your blind instinctive search now for a nickel to suck. And very domestic sort of poem, which is also a love poem, I suppose. Bread making. It's in the yeast, a little at least, in warm water. Currents rising, falling, pushing landmass apart. In the bready gurgle of yeast, a part of me wants to be released into molecules of water, the self-indulgent heart of a bowl with a fulsome purpose akin to crusty colours thick enough to chew. There are endless seas and grassy plains, mountains of the geoscapes that slice the soul in half. Of a night out there, there is comfort in the smell of dough and the warmth of your breath rising. On water. It's to write on water gives intonation, roll, and stress of white horse rush. The word jutting above the surface could be mistaken for a small wave, a mere suffix that could run a ship aground. The wave whispers across the flat scape, mercurial ripping out in echoes. If you were to speak what you hush, your voice would cut the water with the purpose of a porpoise spin, just out of reach, each syllable breaking through the mist, eventually turning off a chop. And that's how it is. The storm you brew without a single word. Your battle with the beauty and the horror of the world. Everything irreconcilable, too vast for words, poured out in a single drop. A tear that causes powder waves and wreaks havoc on my shore. And second last one I read is called Sadness. So I don't need to say too much about it. It was written for somebody in particular, but it's probably applicable to everybody. Sadness. It's hard to say what sadness is. A loneliness of sorts that makes the body leaden, alien to itself. An emptiness so invasive it would require microsurgery of the soul. But how do you remove a hole? And then it's years of memory that come careering out of nowhere, suddenly screaming their significance, making you carry the burden of pretense that says you're in one piece when you're really an amputee. Just to finish on a slightly more obvious note from this book, sunflowers. Bees stretch their sunflower heads, spread blankets of seed over empty streets, medieval miles from the rain. The rose wizened yellow, fading, dragging leaves onto the ground, same old sundance, day in, day out, eyes glazing till the odd head swivels, flops away, a minor continent of summer disappearing. It's not a dream. It's the boy, lost in a fortress of flowers, frog hunting heaven, saving those faces from the sky. One for me, one for you. Standing still, stoned behind a dislocated door. Open it, and the room is flooded with emptiness, mental oil spills. Countries mapped like crumbs across plate, easily devoured. I lick Congo from my fingers, and an elephant gets caught between my teeth. Pick, pick, pick ivory, abuse, amnesia, pick the mind of children silent in my mouth, regurgitating gold and diamonds, slipping sunsets by the bloated bellyful, the famished guts of slavery. I lick Malawi, and Ornithogonopus Waleri sings, or not, perched on the bars of a cloud of toxins, terror stuck in its throat. And this one I wrote for my daughter, who is a teenager, and is going through that difficult to stay for. She's still at home and probably would much regret me somewhere else, but she's still at home, so it's a prophecy for her. You were born in a year of prophecy, but I have no wisdom for you. I only have your imprint on the back of every leaf, its language lingering as the light fades into autumn and you wait to enter other hemispheres. You are the moment of detachment from the tree, the content of a life burgeoning in summer, chapters flown, forgotten, leaving a sadness flung open within its walls. You cast off the old garment, crystallized loneliness as hunger for a voice that has no tongue, its wings fragmented, gone in search of memory, some shadow of an ancestral mother, unaware that she lies wakeful in the present, trickling into consciousness, the promise of embrace. And this next one, I just thought when I read one for her, I should read one for my son, because he's a little bit illogical, given that neither of them know what I'm reading, and they couldn't say this. But anyway, and also, this isn't even a poem, but it's sort of, it is divided up, yeah, a couple lines up into poem lines, but it's more of an anecdote. But I thought you might maybe be enlightened on what a 10-year-old knows about sex. My son tells me that Marge and Homer Simpson often snuggle under the covers. Snuggling, he says, means they're having sex. I'm surprised at how much he seems to know. Relieved there'd be less explaining to be done than I had thought. But I correct him on the snuggling. It doesn't mean they're having sex, I say. Shouldn't I often snuggle with you? He ponders this. Yes, but when Marge and Homer snuggle, he insists, it means they're having sex. Fair enough, he obviously knows what's what. But there's just one thing that doesn't quite gel for him. Mom, he asks, and I can almost see him wince. Have you ever had sex? So from sex we move on to senility. Cognitive scraps, crinkling beyond utility, spreading like a patchwork quilt over the page. The parchment that could bring comfort overpowers meaning. Words that were whole degenerate. Leopard's endings fall off without a sound, filling the head with holes while I look on, trying to expect forgetfulness, the full-on senselessness of your mouth blowing, sucking air. Inventing doggery structures that are supposed to hold everything together when you say, but I had done my poo, my tea, your head, I say, and you smile into the distance, as if you've spotted meaning coming home after a day of despair. You will eventually forget even this much, become less than fragment, irretrievable. This one I wrote, it's a little bit of a departure from my usual style. I was at a concert in October. A woman I know was playing a piano piece by Messiaen, Olivier Messiaen. And Messiaen tried, he spent a lot of his life, of course, in composing. He was an ornithologist, and he tried to capture bird song and the sounds of birds in music, but not in any traditional sort of way, not in any melodious way. So the actual result is very cacophonic, but it's actually very, very close to actual bird sound. And it's very demanding for the performer who has to play this. It's extremely fast. It's sort of all various patterns kind of repeated and inverted and so on. So I was fascinated by the fact that he was interpreting bird song and the pianist is interpreting the music, and I thought I'd try and add my own level of interpretation to that. So here we go. Playing Messiaen. Bird song rushes morning to the tips of her fingers, quivering through trapezium, tapping from the trapezoid, capitulating to the capitate, the hammering palmate. How to trap a sound, bend its bones to breaking, hitting the thrush in the hand, was two nightingales still chirping in the bush, subdued to orchestration, death manipulation, in order to rework, repay, release, to honey-handed practice, of the distal pecs and foot, repeating keys at home, things furthest from the body, soft, loud, strong, cortex, soft, which are soft, the bird, the hand, the ear, the basis breath, hunger for a habitat, worming through the channel jaw, trilling in a language that rebels against all time and meter, hour and season, stop. A moon cloud makes by. Silence rubs itself raw. Far away, the bark of a birch. Silver leaves, sucking light, seeking sun, cortex heaves like a woodpecker, jack-a-tack-a-tack, souls out of the way of the sound, then to attack, beef by tap the neck, select, the birds are at her peck and call as she modulates the pitch, stuffs the silly of stomach shifts, lunges into biorhythm, microphones, rush and brush of our best, the foot all furious action, timber something from the lark, harking back to desert bush, the nest back tight, and then the gathered pat of birth, a song to celebrate the egg, jackdaw, tap tap tapping, patent shaking, skin that poops and dyes the gloves and braces, fingers camouflage as feathers as they flutter, speckled, cheeky, crested, fly, joke spaces in between the sounds, stop that sound. Yes, you know, messing with me here, messing with my ear, harnessing some harsh reality. The tongue is not a teeth. tune. The hand is not to hum. They are lumpish lunate. Muscle melody impeccably performed, true to form and to intent, but lunacy falling short of truth. The press the metacarpal metaphor, take a break, go for a walk in the woods. Burn the energy of stillness on your retina, the interval of whispering, the speed of savage on your scaffold. Listen to the phrase that cannot be controlled even when you hold it in the palm of your hand. It's just a mood to move you. No more. The caging of the senses, the inevitable approximation of our freedom, at the la 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 la. Impossible to trust. And on Saturday night, the first time in ages, I actually fell asleep straight away when I was in my bed, and then I ended up having that all night. So anyway, insomnia. The beauty of pitch runs aground, turns to banality of the blackest kind, blowing the night to thunder. Images invade, brick wall composure with wordless mortar. Dead air drives a blizzard of thought through the mind, awake for the living. I climb the mattress, the pillow, your hot legs. Every pursuit of the house seconds the creaking. Hollow titanic timbers about to split. Some speaking of ink and depth, of ruin, the ecstasy of other nights. There must be a formula for this. A physical S for feet and S for sheep, which fall on the wrong side of the dividing line. Nullify the solution, though it bulges imperfectly, equatorial. Like these snippets of dust volleyed in our chit-chat, the knob and crux and soul of it pursing off, inspired outside the confines of safe conversation, landing in someone else's dream. And luxury apartments are a little bit cynical about luxury apartments. Inside, a trope. You are surprised to learn function flees the moment the doors are in place, clamoring for colour. That the idiom of brushed speed is no longer sufficient, manifestly drab. The storage cupboard won't even fit a ball of wool to pull over your eyes. The trendy hole under the plasma screen yawns with a glow antithetical to heart and home, despite months of interior debate and fortunes spent on cliches. Inside, trap to persuade you that possession is enough, the dream come true, because no one told you that without soul, you can easily be squeezed into any mold. And here's when I live in Dunleary in Dublin, and I sometimes go to a place called the World Cafe, which is kind of built up in a slightly trendy way, and but it used to have, being the World Cafe, it used to have dream catchers and masks on the walls and sort of objects that would remind you of other cultures. And I was there one day reading a poem by Derek Matten called Tony's Restaurant in Port Rush, and I thought, oh, maybe I should write a little bit about this text. So, the World Cafe, Dunleary. In the rush of sound, foreign rhythms push their way to the foreground, firing the Irish morning with mosaic, batik, dream catchers. A fusion of worlds frosted on the window straddle intonation, flirt with a desire for the exotic. But the more you look, the more it all boils down to the waiter, his beard and soft tone, local, scholarly. Far from Africa, he rivals the surprise of masks stunned on the wall, embodies mankind, the toil of millennia. He serves this table impeccably, redeems the fact that its relics of other worlds can offer nothing beyond the descriptive, nothing more than crumbs to the famished traveller. Okay, this one is sort of a love poem, it's not for a person, but things, and I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it'll be embarrassing, so you can guess, it's not hard to guess. Perfection. What I like about you is your depth, even if it does require industrial kit-cutting equipment to reveal the breadth of complexity, myriad moods branching off who knows where. And so there you always go against your own grain, just because there's so much of it. So inconvenient, grain crisscrossing itself, creating knots, lumps, incisions on your personality. Definitely not for the faint hearted. And speaking of hearts, yours in its absence is everywhere, sprawled in a selfless crush, stoically upper-lipped and folded, even willing to be wiped clean, quarried out of house and home. And I love your pores, the way light snuck in once upon a time, nestled parasitically into your geology, thinking it would never be discovered, never raped by greed or vanity. Even your faults and insecurities buffled beautifully, still managed to seduce way beyond dreams of love or freedom, the weight of error tipping so convincingly towards truth. And this is one about little things. It's in the little things, as always, that you come to mind. Raindrops hitting the ground, hard as diamonds, shattering the essence of carbon, the way a word said or unsaid watches the usual rhythms of the heart. And it beats me how the smallest things are always the biggest, the ones that bond us so strongly together, so wrongly tear us apart. How am I doing for time?
Loads of time.
Oh, I'll be finished. Yeah. Oh, I like this really poet quite a lot, and there's one who is super, he's a Peruvian poet, José Vallejo. So I'm reading his work, I write a surreal poem. What came out of that. It's called Highwire, after this I love you. What is the moment suspended on a geometry of emotion? The line between this and that, now and then, supporting the weight of the walker, one foot rising, cajoling oxygen, hydrogen, the nitric toe searching blindly for tension as vision vibrates. Seeing is as useless as knowing the angles and distances. There is no comfort in calculation. The foot relies on other armor, on the breath, a balance of spirit that translates 3 meters into applause, the taut rapture of spectacle, and belief always beyond the physical. The moment is performed years in advance, long before the foot has learned to dream. This second last poem I read is one that I wrote recently. I was in Anna McCarrick, which is a beautiful place. If you ever get a chance to go there, I highly recommend it. You get plenty of time for arriving. But one of the women who was there sent some negative energy, and we sort of did a little ritual to clear the negative energy. So I did it with this woman who was Sasha Abercorn and another lady who Kate was doing, so the poem is dedicated to them. It's called Memory. Deep within these stones, memory runs amok in its attempt to speak and flow. Its accent changes with our comings and goings, ebbing through the earth, stumbling on the occasional lump in its throat, the odd spot or Gaelic diphthong of a pebble colliding with a blade of grass. We hear a gasp and stutter in our sleep, though we cannot understand a word, rooted as we are in the fixity of things. The urge to be heard sweeps the landscape softly, like a flurry, lost the moment it hits the ground. And this is all we have by way of recollection, this air and space, lithographic wisdom, now no more than whispered through the waterline. So, part three of this reading, which I'm up, is something a little bit different. When I came down last time, it was November 7th, and I saw a very warm feeling from you, from the audience. You were the audience, and you made me feel very welcome, and you were very willing to engage and so on with me, which is always nice, it makes life easier when you're up here. So I left that reading thinking that the next time I came back, I'd love to be able to offer something to you specifically to thank you for being an Ion audience. So I wrote a poem for you. It's dedicated to the audience. I think it's the first time I've ever heard a poem being dedicated to a person, the audience. So I decided to do that. And while I was at it, I thought I might as well do something else, a little bit different. And I hope you'll help me out. I thought you might like to participate in the poem as well. So I have about eight blanks. So you know when you get the eighth one, that's the last one. And there's a phrase that you have to say, if you want, to fill in the blank, and I prompt you whenever the blank can come on with the poem. And the phrase that has to go in the blank is, no prize for guessing, who fails. And then I did also something a little bit unusual for me. I don't tend to throw foreign words into poems, but I just thought, since this poem is all about the words, I thought that would be an appropriate theme for a poem for you. I've thrown in words in foreign languages, including some of my favourite words. And I'll just tell you about them a little bit so you know when they pop up what they actually mean. One of them, my all-time favourite word, is an Italian word, which is pipistrello. I like it, the sound of it's so light, but it actually means a bath. Okay. After image for the sound of the word. Anyway, pipistrello, you recognise that comes up. And yeah, I've been learning Polish for the past few months, and I love the consonantal clusters of Polish. It's impossible to get your tongue around them. It's just like saying words with anything else. So the word for book in Polish is książka. So książka comes up in Polish as well. And it's a Spanish word that I quite like, because it's the exact opposite, if you like, of pipistrello. It's jengibre. Very harsh sounding. I like it because it's so harsh. So these words come up. It means ginger, by the way. And it's the same origin as the English word for ginger. So I think that's it. I will prompt you and you can throw in your phrase, Bovee. So the title of the poem is Bovee. And it's for your real audience, the regulars, and I had to join the regulars as well because there are lots of people who I'm sure can't always make it, would love to make it. I hope they're not insulted by being called the regulars, but however. What is the word if not its mouth open, closed, stretched, first? The lips, teeth, tongue, palate, reach, quintet, and the little squiggly bit dangling at the back of your throat. Good for Spanish words like jengibre, and even simple English words like hello, how are you? Air funneling from lungs to larynx to fill the mouth with all those things you want to say. The beauty of the word slipping into consciousness from nada into dada, embryonic vision splitting morph and eem, then merging into multisyllable, tumbling with its own momentum towards intelligible speech. Without that struggle to be heard, how would we reveal the workings of the psyche, the splintered contradiction of unspoken words, synaptic between thought and articulation, agglutinating silence, with the spectre of a sound, a hum, a murmur, burble, giggle, cough, a toast of genie, puffed into the air, with fricatives confused around it, shitting, fizzing, fat excuses, whispering the ah, the o, the frightened e, or vowed voice. Glottic, gloopy, started by the jams and crashes, the trafficking of letters in the buccal cavity. The word once learned muddles to a medley of vibrations, plucks the cords that build up to the quiet word, the good word, the good word, the weasel word wrestling with unfuckled fear. Paradoxa, on parole, parola chiave for that crossword, and the good word, another word, magic word, mojus, I fini giochi di parole, and unfuckled gemma that takes the words right out of the mouth. Even the single word can sing when it's and the word you give when you give your word, is especially melodious to the ear, not like a single word, as in, I want a word with you. There's no melody in that one, that's just an understatement, morbidly bulldozing to your self-esteem. So much individuality in the flowery speak of some folk, their mouths degenerate perennially in bloom, pushing up from the undergrowth mercurial, quirky, weedy words. Let be done with him with some flour, poor Mrs. Malkoff was clamoured to London gas and powder. Who cares what an hour a consonant is? You don't need to know the difference between adjectives and syllables to string a sentence together. Speech will forge its path. Master a megalithic gamut of palaver loud and clear, in tandem with the listening ear, the audience, you, the sick, what's that? Shoot it, thanks, Bubble Air. The word hammers home, fires the air, cochlear and muscly, alive, alive, oh, nourishes the thought, a cough that feeds the sparks and churns the neurons, turning word salads into proper food for thought, wordy wisdom, solidarity globalized, spoke in its spoke, whether spoken, whispered, shouted, sung, it's ours, and new, it's a phenoid, linking us in an embrace that filters into far-flung corners of the heart when we communicate.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much.